Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue. In Rogue's Gallery. Rogue speaking. Well, tonight you're going to meet some charming people. And you're going to run into a little bit of very fancy murder. The name of the story is Little Drops of Rain. But before we get into our story, here's Jim Doyle, the man from the Fitch Company.
Did you know that there are over 50 million men in the United States who shave? Yes, that's a lot of men. It was in the interest of these 50 million shavers that Fitch Company chemists and technicians went to work in their laboratories and came up with Fitch's No Brush, a shaving cream especially designed to give a solid comfort shave. You see, Fitch's No Brush shaving cream contains not one, but three important shaving ingredients that work together to give you a smoother, faster shave. It also contains a special skin conditioner ingredient. Men appreciate this ingredient because it has a soothing effect on the skin the instant it's applied, and it keeps the skin feeling smooth and refreshed long after the shave is finished. Men also like the just right consistency of Fitch's No Brush. It's neither too thick nor too thin. It's not greasy and won't clog the razor.
If you're among those who prefer a lather cream, try Fitch's Brush Cream. It gives a rich, dense lather that wilts whiskers completely soft for clean, fast shaves.
Both Fitch's Brush and Fitch's No Brush shaving cream come in big 25 and 50 cent sizes. Try a jar. You'll find it easier on your razor and easier on you.
Thank you, Jim. And now I'd like to tell my story.
Okay, here's Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue in another personally conducted tour through Rogue's Gallery.
Well, I'm still confined to my little cranked-up downy couch in the hospital, but not as still as I was last week. I am now allowed to get up and totter around a little, and I use the word totter advisedly. My legs act like strangers who have different political beliefs, and my knees have suddenly developed sideways hinges. But my nurses, my nurses. Yes, they're beautiful and tender. And resistant. And speaking of nurses, nurses are girls, and girls are my favorite pastime. And that brings me up to the girl who has done the most to confuse my life. Liza. The girl I was so sincerely in love with a couple of months ago. Liza was in to see me. She just left, and we were talking about the time when I showed up at her apartment for a date. It was raining out, and I was sitting at the piano, doodling around a little bit.
I don't want to go to a nightclub tonight, Richard. I'm too tired. Let's just go to a show, shall we?
Anything you say, baby. That's the kind of guy I am.
I want to see Two Girls and a Sailor. It's playing at the Rialto.
June Allison's in that, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's for me, then.
You think so?
Definitely.
You think she's prettier than I am?
Well, you're not in pictures, Angel.
Do you think she's prettier than I am?
Well, you're a different type.
Are you going to answer me?
Oh, you're jealous. How can you be jealous of a girl I don't even know? Give me a kiss.
No.
Oh, but baby, I love you. I love you like anything.
All right.
Pop, then. I don't care. June is busting out all over the meadow and the hill. Busts are busting out of bushes, and the robin river pushes,
Every little wheel that wheels beside a mill. June is busting out all over. The feeling is getting so intense that the young Virginia creepers have been hugging the bejeepers out of all the morning glories on the fence. Because it's June, 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 June.
You're insufferable, Richard. Rogue.
Oh, now quit pouting. Come on over here, on the bench by me.
Are we going to a show or not?
Sure. Get your lipstick on again and we'll see what...
Oh.
I'll get it.
No, I'll answer. It's probably George.
Oh, George. Well, I'll tell him, that homewrecker. Hello.
Is Richard Rogue there?
Speaking.
This is your call service, Mr. Rogue. We got a call for you.
Oh. Who is it?
Mrs. Harvey Burgess says it's very important.
Okay, put her on.
Right.
Oh, put her on. Who is it?
Shh. Hello?
Richard Rogue speaking.
This is Mrs. Harvey Burgess.
Yes?
I must see you at once, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, well, any time tomorrow, Mrs.
Burgess.
I will
see you tonight, immediately. It is most important.
Well, can't you tell me about it over the phone?
Oh, no. Could you come to my house at once?
What's the address?
485 Hillcrest. You'll be well paid for your time. Please hurry.
I'll be right out, Mrs. Burgess. Wait for me. I'll be right back, honey.
Go on. Go on out to see Mrs. Burgess. Don't mind me, Dick Tracy.
Well, what could I do? Mrs. Harvey Burgess was the wife of a tycoon with a dollar for every Democrat in Georgia. I tried to explain to Liza, but I was talking to myself, and I left for the Burgess residence. I left Liza burning like Mrs. O'Leary's barn. The Burgess mansion was a huge colonial affair. George Washington could have slept there every night. He was at Valley Forge and never seen the same room twice. A butler who talked like he was choking to death on an olive pit conducted me into the library and into the presence of Mrs. Harvey Burgess. Oh, my. What a presence. She was sitting in front of the open fire, filling out a hostess gown that didn't straighten out any of the curves she featured. I pulled my eyes back into my head and tried not to look too interested.
Sit down, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, thank you. I'm in a bit of a hurry tonight, Mrs. Burgess. As a matter of fact,
Mr. Rogue, my husband is making a fool of himself.
Yes?
He's lost his mind completely over a secretary in his office. His secretary. A girl by the name of Helen Stark.
You mean that...
Yes, I mean he prefers her company to mine.
Well, that doesn't sound reasonable, if you'll pardon me for saying so. What do you want me to do?
Somebody has to bring Harvey back to his senses, Mr. Rogue.
Well, I'm afraid you've called in the wrong man. I'm not very good at long fatherly talks.
Oh, and Mr. Rogue, please, I'm so alone.
Hey, now wait a minute. Good grief. You mean to tell me that Harvey is neglecting you? What you need to straighten Harvey out is a psychiatrist, not a detective. Harvey is definitely off his trolley.
Please, help me, Mr. Rogue.
No, Mrs. Burgess.
He's with her right this minute.
How do you know?
When he left the house tonight, I followed him. He went to the home of his best friend, Clarence Roman. I parked across the street. I was going in and face them, but I saw Mr. Roman leave, and I lost my nerve. That's when I called you. Oh, Mr. Rogue, I want you to go out there and talk to Harvey. Tell him I know all about him and that Stark girl, and I'm suing him for divorce.
Well, that's not my kind of work, Mrs. Burgess. I'm
Please,
sorry, but
I... I don't want to divorce Harvey, but I do want him back. And I'm sure that if you will do as I say, he'll come back. You must do it for me, Mr. Rogue. Here, where is it? I have $500 here in an envelope.
You did? Oh, wait a minute here. Let me see. Is this it?
Yes, that's your fee.
Hmm.
For going out there with me, Mr. Rogan, trying to bring Harvey back to his senses. You'll do it for me, won't you, Mr. Rogue?
Well,
You'll do it for me, won't you, Mr. Rogue?
Okay, come along. All right. Well, it seems there's nobody home.
There's my husband's convertible out in front, right where he left it tonight when I followed him out here.
How did the girl arrive?
In her car. Oh, her car isn't here. It was right behind Harvey's.
Looks like we got here too late, doesn't it?
Try the door. I know Harvey's still here.
All right. You're an old friend of Roman's, I suppose.
Yes. Why?
I just want to know before I try to open the door. You see, there are laws against that sort of thing. Door's unlocked. Do we go in?
Yes.
Okay, after you. You know the house better than I do. Go ahead.
All right. The living room is over here.
Ah, nobody home. Look, Mrs. Burgess, we better get out of here.
No. I know Harvey's in this house someplace, and I'm going to find him. I can't... What are you sniffing for?
Wait a minute. That smell in the air. You get it?
What? Oh. I don't smell anything.
You don't? I smell chloroform.
Chloroform?
Yeah. You take a look upstairs. I'm going to shake down the first floor. That smell of chloroform can mean trouble, you know.
Mr. Roque, what do you mean? You're frightening me.
Mrs. Burgess was very fetching when she was frightened. But I calmed her down a little bit. Now, this may sound fantastic, but I've got a little bell in my head that rings an alarm every time I really get around serious trouble. And it was playing a tune that sounded too much like a death march right that minute. I had to get her out of the way. She finally went upstairs, and I went to work. I took the living room first and looked behind all the couches and in all the dark corners. I was bending over, looking under a huge Italian carved table when I thought I heard a stealthy footstep behind me.
Don't move.
Oh! Oh, my ears were still full of that ringing scream Mrs. Burgess had let out as I caught that sock behind the ear and drifted gently through space toward cloud number 8 and my alter ego, Hugo. I was hoping he wouldn't be there, but he was. Sitting there with that silly smirk on his face, with his little short legs pulled up under his chin, and his funny little arms around them, and his long white beard waving the cosmic breeze.
Hello, Richard. Welcome home.
No, shut up.
That's a fine attitude. You go prowling around a strange house and get caught at it and knocked out. Then you come up here and take it out on me. Get out of here, you ingrate.
Oh, stop acting like a landlord, Hugo. What happened to me?
Are you kidding?
Tell me, why did Mrs. Burgess scream? Answer me, Hugo. Do you know why she screamed?
Sure.
You going to tell me?
No. Find out for yourself. You're a detective.
Oh, someday I'm going to get rid of you, you little pest.
Why don't you get back to work? You got a date with Liza, you know. She's still waiting.
Yeah, that's right. Well, here goes.
Oh. Come on, Rogue. Please, come on.
You didn't have to hit him so hard, Clarence.
Oh, who hit me?
I'm Clarence Roman, Rogue. I came home, I found the front door unlocked, I walked in, I saw a strange man prowling around my parlor. A woman screamed, and I hit you with my cane.
Well, what do you carry for a cane? A ball bat? Why did you scream, Mrs. Burgess?
I found my husband. Upstairs. He's dead, murdered!
We'll return to our story in just a moment. But now, I'd like to say something to the ladies. Do you ever feel like hanging your head in shame because your hair isn't, well, looking as nice as it should? Perhaps you get discouraged because every time you shampoo your hair, it seems dry and difficult to set. Then for your next shampoo, why not try Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo? This clear, golden liquid shampoo is made from mild coconut and vegetable oils. These pure natural oils keep your hair from becoming dry and brittle. When you use Fitch's Saponified Shampoo, You can have a shampoo as often as you like, and after each one, your hair will be soft and lustrous, easy to set into your favorite hairstyle. You'll love the glorious quantities of fragrant lather this shampoo makes. It cleanses thoroughly and then rinses out completely without a special after rinse. You see, Fitch's saponified shampoo contains its own patented rinsing agent. All you do is rinse with plain water, and the rinsing agent contained in the shampoo ensures the removal of all particles from your hair, making it sparkle with cleanliness. Ask for Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo at your drug counter, barber, or beauty shop. Look for the bottle with the bright yellow label. Now back to Rogue's Gallery. Richard Rogue is telling our story.
Well, I had accepted a case for Mrs. Harvey Burgess, a suspicious wife. Yes, that's the Mrs. Harvey Burgess of the Burgess Millions. She suspected her husband of having a rendezvous with Helen Stark, his secretary, at the home of Clarence Roman, Burgess's best friend, and we went out there together. Nobody answered the door, so we went in. My suspicions were aroused when I smelled the unmistakable odor of chloroform. Mrs. Burgess was looking around upstairs while I searched the downstairs. Suddenly, I heard Mrs. Burgess scream.
My husband! Upstairs! He's dead! Murdered!
Well, that snapped me out of it. I got to my feet and ran up the stairs. Mrs. Burgess and Roman were right behind me, and she directed me into the library, which was just off the main hall. And there he was, as dead as last summer's romance, with a neat little blue hole right below the part in his hair. He was a nice-looking old guy, about 50, which made him a good 25 years older than his wife. And his widow was really taking his death big, which was natural. A woman doesn't have a husband murdered every day.
Poor Harvey, this is horrible.
Has anything in this room been moved or touched?
Well, I just arrived home.
When
I looked
in here and saw Harvey, I knew he was dead. I screamed.
Yes, yes, I heard you. Then you ran right downstairs.
Yes, I saw Mr. Roman hit you, and I ran down to tell him who you were.
That's a little late. Okay. Just don't touch anything. Stay right there in the door, both of you.
Just who are you to be giving us orders?
You'll find out. Ever see this gun before?
Yes.
Where?
It was Harvey's. He kept it in his desk at the office.
Oh, you recognized it mighty quickly. How?
It has his initials on it. I can see them from here, inset in the butt of the gun.
Oh. His gun, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't suicide. Not with the gun clear over here on the opposite side of the room. This is murder. Hey.
What's the matter?
Well, this ought to do it.
What is it?
What's your handkerchief? A very nice linen handkerchief with initials in the corner. And blood on it.
What initials?
H.S.
Helen Stark, that's her handkerchief. She killed Harvey. She killed my Harvey.
Is there a phone upstairs here?
Yes. You'll find an extension in the hall.
Thanks. Come on out of this room. I don't want anything touched or moved.
Now, now. Dear, please.
You two wait for me downstairs. I'll be down just a minute. As soon as I call the police.
Homicide, Urban speaking.
Hello, Urban. Richard Rogue.
Yeah, who's dead?
Harvey Burgess, wise guy.
Hmm? You mean it? You mixed up in another murder, Rogie?
Sure. You'd never find a body if it wasn't for me.
Where are you?
At the residence of Clarence Roman on Cypress Avenue, 2120. Better get the boys and get out here.
Be right there. Got any leads on the killer?
Yeah, a couple of vague ideas.
Stay there until I get there, Rogue.
Hello?
Oh, hello, Liza, dolly. This is Rogie.
Oh, you know what time it is.
Oh, sure, honey,
I'll give you 10 minutes to get back here and take me to that show.
What? Oh. Look, Roman. Roman, the cops will be here in a minute. Tell Urban, that's Lieutenant Urban. He'll be in charge for the police, that I'll be right back, will you? Tell him I went out to get a murderess for him.
Of course. And I hope you manage to catch her, Rogue.
Good evening. Is Helen Stark at home?
I beg your pardon. I'm a bit deaf. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I said, is Helen Stark at home?
Oh, Helen, no, she isn't home this evening.
Has she been home? I say, has she been home in the last hour?
No, she hasn't. I don't know what time to expect her either, but I imagine she'll be home soon, though.
You know where she is?
Well, she didn't come home from the office tonight. She's working late.
Oh, she called you and told you she wouldn't be home.
Yes. She said she was going to work with Mr. Burgess. That's her boss, you know, the millionaire.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Could I tell her who called?
No. That won't be necessary. Thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Stark. You and Helen live here all alone?
Yes. Since her mother died several years ago. Are you an old friend of Helen's?
No, a very recent acquaintance.
Oh.
I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. Stark. Good night.
Good evening. Nice out after the rain, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, that nice little old guy. It was going to be tough for him to realize that his daughter was a killer. I hated the world as I walked down the steps from that porch and started for my car. I don't like murder. It upsets so many people who aren't involved in the act or the reasons for it. Yeah, I guess I'm a chicken-hearted Patsy. But if I am, I'm glad. Anyway, I was walking down the walk when that little bell rang in my massive intellect again. I noticed something peculiar. There were tire tracks running into the Stark garage. It had only stopped raining about 45 minutes before, and if that car had been driven into the garage while it was still raining, there would be no tracks. They would have been washed away. Now, very peculiar. I ran up the driveway and opened the overhead garage door. Then I jumped back. The garage was full of carbon monoxide. I wet my handkerchief in a puddle of rainwater, held it over my nose, and ran into the garage. I wrestled the door of the small coupe open and saw a young girl, unconscious, slumped over the steering wheel. I pulled her out of there. She was dead weight, and carried her into the house.
Oh, Helen. Helen.
I'm afraid it's a little late for that, Mr. Stark. Where's your telephone?
In the hall. Right in the hall.
Thanks. I'll get a pull motor squad out here right away.
Fire department.
Get a pull motor squad to 640 Inglewood Drive. Attempted suicide. Bad shape. Rush it.
Right.
Raymond, Ramsey, Redding, Roman. Roman, Clarence. Hello, Lieutenant Urban, please. This is Richard Rogue, and it's important.
This is Urban speaking, Rogue. I thought I told you to stay here.
Look, never mind the argument. Get out here to 640 Inglewood Drive. I've got Helen Stark for you.
You have? Nice work. I want to talk to that young lady.
Well, you missed the boat. I think she's dead. Suicide. Carbon monoxide poisoning. Step on it.
Okay, Rogue. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Don't go away.
I gave Helen Stark my own interpretation of artificial respiration until the pull motor squad got there. Urban arrived on the heels of the fire department, and we went out and looked around in the garage, made some fascinating discoveries, too. The car had run out of gas and stopped turning over, for one thing, and one thing led to another, to coin a phrase. Anyway, Urban and I made a little deal. I went back to the Roman residence, and while he and his boys were being scientific, I sat in the parlor and talked with Mrs. Burgess and Clarence Roman. Mrs. Burgess had recovered her poise to some extent. They were both very anxious to know all about my daring capture of the Stark girl.
I'm glad she's dead. I couldn't stand a trial. I'm glad she committed Suicide.
Yes, I guess it seemed like the only way out. She wasn't very smart about murder, leaving clues all over the place the way she did. Even the cops would have had her in 24 hours. How well did you know the Star Girl, Roman?
Rather well. I'd see her around the office a great deal. Harvey was, well, not very discreet about the fact that he was fond of her.
Please, Clarence. Harvey's dead. We should forget those things. He was a good husband. I don't know what life's going to be like without him.
I just have an idea that it's going to be pretty simple, Mrs. Burgess. And possibly rather short.
What do you mean?
I mean that the police suspected you and Mr. Roman murdered your husband and Miss Stark.
That's a serious accusation, Rogue.
Your husband was suing you for divorce, wasn't he, Mrs. Burgess? He knew you were going to be there with Mr. Roman, his best friend, tonight. So he came and surprised you with Helen Stark for a witness, didn't he? And you, Mr. Roman, you killed him, and then you had to kill Helen Stark to shut her up.
This is preposterous.
Sit down, Roman.
You were right, Rogie. We found Roman's fingerprints on the steering wheel of Helen Stark's car. One of the boys just got back with a report that Roman's shoe is a perfect fit in that shoe print outside Stark's garage.
I had nothing to do with it. Clarence killed Harvey, and then he chloroformed that Stark girl, and then...
You're in this as far as I am. Shut up!
I've got more news for you, Roman. Helen Stark isn't dead. The car ran out of gas just in time. She'll be there to appear against you when you're tried for murder. Hello, Liza, honey.
I don't want to talk to you, Richard Rogue. I'm busy.
Oh, now, honey.
The lady says she's busy.
Yeah? Who are you?
His name is George. Good night, chump.
Ah, little drops of rain. The stuff we're getting so much of out here in California right now saved Helen Stark's life. Because if I hadn't noticed those tire tracks, she'd have stayed in the garage until it was too late for the Pull Motor Squad to save her. Yes, sir. Little drops of rain put the curse on what was almost a perfect double murder. With the help of my massive intellect, there's only one thing I can't understand. How come a guy as smart as I am gets hit on the head so often? Answer me that, will you? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. How did you like our little story tonight? Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and D. Engelbach produced and directed. Don't forget to tune in next Thursday night. We're going to present a strange story of a house where everybody was scared. We call it the House of Fear. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening, and good night, all. Now here's Jim Doyle.
Don't forget to tune in again next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Removes dandruff the first time it is used. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is the only shampoo whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance companies. This statement can be made by no other shampoo. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug counter, barber, or beauty shop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
Folks, when we see a wounded veteran, we can thank him with our eyes and with a smile. We can also thank him in more material ways, like helping make sure he gets all the benefits of the GI Bill of Rights. That takes money, the money we lend when we buy victory bonds. Buy victory bonds.
Mrs. Perkins won the prize, but I got in the biggest pickle at the county fair. This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius. We'll be right back. Dance Account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. 2, Home Office, Corinthian Liability and Bonding Company, Terminal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my assignment as bodyguard to Grand Blue Ribbon Champion, Spotted Poland China Hog, Rosie Baron of Iowa, or How You Cast My Pearls of Wisdom Before Swine, or Out of the Fire into the Frying Pan. Expense account, item 1, $76.80. Train and bus fare, Hartford, to the town of Carver, county seat of Carver County, Iowa. Expense account, item 2, $2.50. One coat, 3 handkerchiefs, a bottle of salt tablets, and sunglasses, with which to combat the Corn Belt heat. Item 3, 6 bits, jitney ride to the Carver County Fairground. Undoubtedly named that because the band I found in the midst of playing its afternoon concert was only fair. Hey, friend.
How's that?
I'm looking for a pig named Rosie Baron of Iowa. Tell me where I'll find his cage.
Cage? They don't keep Rollo in no cage.
Rollo? Who's he?
Well, that's short for Rosie Baron of Iowa.
Oh, yeah. Any fool would know that.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me where he is?
See that building over there, the livestock building?
Yeah.
You'll find Rollo in the swine wing.
Swine wing? Well, that conjures up a dainty picture. A flying pig.
Afraid Rollo won't ever do much flying. Weighs 980.
Oh, well, thanks a lot.
Old neighbor.
Yeah?
Why don't you try slipping out of that there coat? You won't find it near as sweaty.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Hiram. Oh, he didn't even wait to be my best friend. Hey!
Wait, I'll come with you, neighbor.
It was 96 in the shade, but things were getting hotter. Got some strength from the livestock building with the only thing that was bringing up along. With Hiram on my heels.
Hey, what do you suppose that was?
First, I ran into a stranger just outside the entrance.
Get out of the way! Let me out of here! There's
there. Then I ran into the door.
Somebody do something! Don't just stand there! Where's the sheriff?
Hey, Hiram, what happened?
Well, didn't you see? Didn't you hear? That there woman's Mrs. Stewart. Somebody must have stole her diamond boots.
Oh, good. I was afraid somebody might have put the snatch on Rollo.
Her husband owns Rollo. Oh? They must have been taking her pictures of Mrs. Tiller in the middle of a crowd. And when they had her smiling real pretty, them flash bulbs went off, and then somebody must have reached around behind her, yanked the boots, and started shooting a gun in there.
That's a tried and true method of busting up a crowd to help make a getaway. You think anybody saw who did it?
Uh-uh, couldn't. Yeah, those flashes would have had them blind as bat for a minute. There's the sheriff.
What's his name?
That's Harry Blewett.
Harry Blewett?
Yeah.
Sounds like a slogan from the Republican campaign.
Here, you.
Wait a minute, let's go. With everybody around here trying to get my coat off. Come on, Sheriff. Loose the habitat.
All right, now, never mind the fancy talk, young fella. I saw something pass between you and one of the thieves just outside the door.
Oh, you're out of your mind. That guy bumped into me. He came crashing out of here, and I happened to be in the way.
I'll bet you happened to be in the way. Accidentally, on purpose.
Now, that's an early American comeback. But that's the way it was. Now, look, I won't ask you for a search warrant, Sheriff. You think I got the brooch on me? Start looking.
All right, I will.
All right. Now, in that pocket, cigarettes and a lighter.
I see them.
You see? And in that pocket, handkerchiefs and salt tablets.
Salt tablets?
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you look in my inside coat pocket? And there you'll find my wallet and identification.
I will come into that.
Well, no. Dollar, insurance investigator, Hartford, Connecticut. Well, what brought you out here?
I'm a piggy sitter for the Corinthian Liability and Bonding Company. They wrote a policy for $25,000 on your friend Rollo, Rosie Baron of Iowa.
Who ever heard of taking out a $25,000 insurance policy on a hog?
I did. And right now, I wish I hadn't. Some people pay high premiums for publicity, Sheriff. And that's what the Blue Ribbon Prime Packing Company is doing in this case. Now, may I have my wallet back? I want to count my money.
Yeah, now, here. All right. Here's your wallet.
You may think you're quite the joker, young fella, but I'm telling you right now, I'm going to keep an eye on you.
I got a better idea than that, Harry. If I were you, I'd go looking for that photographer.
Why? What did he do?
He took the picture. And there's just a chance the thief may be in it.
astray. That gives me an idea.
Sheriff, whoever says you aren't smart makes no mistake.
Rollo, the prize porker, wasn't hard to find. First, I followed a few signs. Then it was a matter of closing in on a contented series of juicy, slurping grunts that came blurping up out of a succulent mound of Louisiana yams. Rollo was all fat and a yard wide, but his table manners weren't much. He didn't look very smart, but he sure looked healthy. 980 pounds, well, a fine figure of a pig. Pardon me, miss. Could you tell me who's in charge around here?
Well, just for the moment, I am.
Well, I'm trying to find a Mr. Worthington Tiller, who I take it owns this monster.
Monster? What's
the matter? Have I said something wrong?
You certainly have. And you've also said it to the wrong person. In case you don't know it, my name is Alva Anderson.
Oh, my name is Johnny Dollar. How do you do? What's all this got to do with Rollo?
Nothing. I just raised Rosie Barron of Iowa from a suckling, that's all.
Kind of got away from you, didn't it? Sorry, Miss Anderson, I apologize. To you too, Rollo.
Sorry about the interruption, Miss Anderson. Some fool made off with my wife's diamond brooch. How is this excitement affecting Rollo? Oh, I hope he hasn't lost any weight.
Well, you took it very well, Mr. Tanner.
Oh, good, good.
This gentleman wants to see you. Mr. Dollar.
Oh? Oh, yes. Oh, from the insurance company.
That's
good,
right.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're here. We'll have your picture taken right away with my wife and Rollo. Oh, it'll make grand publicity for Blue Ribbon Prime Packers.
I don't mind having my picture taken. Just as long as your wife doesn't mind having people pinch your diamond brooches.
Oh, well, then, don't worry about that. It was fully insured.
Oh, that kind,
the
huh?
thing I want you to worry about is Rollo here. Mm-hmm. As president of Blue Ribbon, I paid Miss Anderson $10,000 for this magnificent swine, and I don't want anything to happen to it.
You bought him for $10,000, insured him for $25,000, and you don't want anything to happen to him?
Well, I don't mind paying those exorbitant premiums when I get back the kind of publicity this will bring in. I can see it in the papers now. America's fabulous insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar, sent from Hartford, Connecticut, to guard the life of that fabulous prize swine, Rosie Barron of Iowa.
Well, Mr. Tiller, I don't mind getting my name in the paper for a pig, just so long as it is not in the obituary column. I just couldn't stand having my tombstone read, Johnny Dollar no longer am. He gave up his life for a great big ham. My tombstone tagline was over the head of Mr. Tiller, but it went over right nicely with Alva Anderson, who paid off with a smile. I parlayed that into a conversation, helped me pass the time while guarding Rollo, the poor man's blue boy. By the time it was over, Alva knew a lot about me, and I knew a lot about pigs. You know, you have beautiful eyes, Alva.
Mr. Dollar, do you know what's really interesting about the origin of swine? Why, it's estimated that the Chinese people domesticated swine about 2900 B.C.
And not only that, but I'm sure you'd like Hartford.
And Mr. Dollar, you probably don't know this, but a pig is one of the most important food animals. It's an economical converter of grain and other feeds into body tissue, as the products of which furnish meat and fat for human consumption.
Alva, darling, I'll only be in town for a little while.
And not only that, but people who say that pigs are dirty don't know what they're talking about. Why, sanitation is essential to good health, rapid growth and development, and profitable production.
Oh, Rollo, what have you got that I haven't got? I still don't know whether Alva stuck around because of my charms or Rollo's. But she was still there at the changing of the guard when Mr. Tiller, in person, came to relieve me long enough for a trip to the dining hall. And what do you think they had for dinner? What else? Baked ham.
Oh, dinner was wonderful, Johnny.
Coming from you after eating baked ham, that sounds practically cannibalistic.
Oh, Johnny, stop. More coffee?
Nah, I've had it. Alva, you know, there's something I've been trying to say to you for the past 5 hours.
Yes, Johnny?
Well, it's just that, I want...
Oh, Mrs. Sheriff.
Oh,
Why doesn't he blow his fire up?
Well, I have to be going. It's time to get Rollo ready for the winner's trade past the grandstand. I'll just run along.
I'll just go with you.
Dollar, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'll see you later, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, Sheriff.
Hey, you being a sort of investigator, Dollar, I knew you'd be interested in my method.
You're sure interfering with mine.
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, do you know what I did?
What?
I found that photographer, had that picture developed, and rushed it up to the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And they just called me. Dollar, there's a known criminal in that photo. He's got that brooch, and he's on the loose. Do you know what that means?
Yeah. It means that you shouldn't be sitting here talking to me. Who is this villain?
They say he's over there.
Yeah. What?
They say he's known as Little Rock. Originally, hailed from Arkansas. You'd know him if you saw him. He's the fellow that bumped into you. I want you to help me look for him.
I take only one job at a time, Sheriff. Right now, I got to take them out. And there goes the Grand March. Boy, in case I'm interested later, how much do you pay your special deputy today?
$7. And expensive.
Sheriff Blewett, I'm afraid that blows it. The Crawford County Pickle and Pie winners were lining up to lead the Grand March by the time I got to the grandstand. Down at the tag end of the livestock echelon, there was a shiny white cab and trailer sporting the markings and mottos of the Blue Ribbon Prime Packing Company. And high upon it, perched on a platform and surrounded by a sturdy iron railing, stood that champion, the pride of the fort set, Rollo, Rosie Barron of Iowa. It was lovely. It was divine. I had a feeling that swelled my heart with pride. Here they were, products of the American home and the American soil. A fanfare of foodstuffs flowing from the horn of plenty. Just because of my association with Rollo, I felt that I was playing some small part in this gallant parade as it was started the first leg of its journey. It was inspiring. It was thrilling. It was... boring. All of a sudden, it was downright frightening. As Rollo's chariot rolled by, I got an eyeful of its driver. It was my comrade in collision, the guy who had put the snatch on Mrs. Tiller's diamond, Little Rocky from Arkansas. I added to my treasury of thankless tasks by trying to pin a tackle on a 5-ton truck. I got a door handle with one hand, running low with one foot, and a spout in the teeth from an unexpected adversary.
Knock him loose, Rollo. He's on the running board.
Hey, what? I was stuck on my back. Everybody was screaming and hollering. The truck was crashing to the bridge. And Rollo, Rosie Barron of Iowa, was one little piggy who wasn't staying at home.
In just a moment, the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, taking in the action from Johnny Dollar, are you? All right, that's good, because staying with CBS is the way you'll head straight for the big return from vacation 8 days from now, Monday the 29th, of Lux Radio Theater and all the other big Monday night CBS favorites. And by staying with CBS, you'll find more action later tonight with Bill Grant of Call the Police and with Sam Spade, who'll be heard from on most of these same CBS stations. Now, with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Oh. Johnny, are you all right? Can you get up?
Oh. The spirit's willing. I'm not sure about my spine.
Here, let me help.
I'm the guy who goes around telling kiddies never to hitch rides on trucks. Well, nobody can say I didn't make a dent in Iowa.
It was wonderful the way you tried. But what are you going to do now?
Right now, I don't know. The only place I can think of at the moment where I might find a hot pig is a barbecue stand.
Oh, this is no time to be funny.
Well, look, up until now, all the laughs are on me, kid. So let me be the judge, huh?
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, first, I'm going to practice my arithmetic and see what adds up. You can't unload a stolen pig in a pawn shop. So, question number one is, where do you unload it? Where would you go?
Where would I... Well, I'd never thought of it.
Well, here's what I figured. The Rollo on the hook is too well known to peddle for anything like the dough he's really worth. I mean, he's not like a big diamond that you can cut up and live... Or is he? What is the going price on pork?
The market this morning was at $23.50.
Well, that kind of money hardly sounds like Little Rocky kind of project. But maybe things are tough. By the way, Alva, have you ever been in Arkansas by any chance?
Why not? Why do you ask?
Just a minute, I want to talk to you.
Oh, Ronnie, I blood on himself.
Yeah, Sheriff?
Would you mind, Alvin?
I was just leaving.
How can she do that cold on such a hot night?
Huh?
What's bothering you, Sheriff?
I saw your little performance, Dollar, when you leapt at that truck. Just how hard was you really trying?
How hard was I? I gotta punch you in the nose, badge or no badge.
Don't you go getting huffy. I just want you to know that I don't be easy. When I'm on a case, I'm suspicious of everybody.
That must be rough on your wife. How often do you have her in handcuffs?
Huh? Well,
Sheriff, all I need from you is the use of a car so I can go looking for old Lardhead.
Oh, no, you don't. There's enough missing around here as it is. Rollo, Ms. Tiller's jewelry, and I ain't about to add a county vehicle to the mess. And besides, I want to keep an eye on you.
Good. You might learn something. Come on.
Here, wait a minute. Where are you going?
Over to the Ferris wheel. That truck hasn't been off the fairgrounds in more than a couple of minutes. I want to get a look at the countryside.
Ferris wheel. Say, that gives me an idea.
I hoped it would. Come on. Say, Sheriff, I don't know very much about this farmside turreting racket.
Well, there's more to it than meets the eyes, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet there is. Tell me. Didn't I see a feed trough on Rollo's truck with a lot of mash in it?
Well, now, let's see. If he ate yams this afternoon, he'd eat mash tonight, all right.
Does mash kick up any kind of a smell?
Oh, sour will. But the pig seems to like it.
Uh-huh. How does this sound to you, Sheriff? Suppose right after you take your ride to the top of the Ferris wheel to case the countryside, we were to get ourselves a nice, hungry pig.
Say, that gives me an idea. We could take that pig and he could smell that mash in the air and sniff out the trail of that truck.
Sheriff, if you aren't a genius, I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, sure.
It was planting time in Iowa that night, at least for ideas, two of which I had planted in the not-too-fertile mind of Sheriff Harry Blewett. And as long as it took us to walk from the trotting track to the Ferris wheel, it came harvest time for notion number one.
Right on the big wheel. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Okay, mister, I'm the sheriff. I want you to run me up to the top of that wheel and hold me there long enough for me to get a look around.
When the wheel came to a stop with Harry Blewett sitting in his little cage at the top, I pulled a low trick on a high sheriff. I bought a pink lemonade from the juice stand next to the Ferris wheel, walked over to the motor that rolled the big heap, unscrewed the cap on the gas tank, and gave it a big, long drink. I hope it wasn't doing to people's stomachs what it did to that motor. You might well remember this harmless little deceit the next time you have occasion to get rid of a sheriff.
This kind of publicity is a little too expensive, Dollar. I demand that you do something.
Now, don't worry, Mr. Tiller. I am going to do something.
I'll
thank you to remember that the only ones who stand to get hurt right at this point are the insurance companies that wrote the policies on your pig and your wife's diamond brooch.
Why, Worthington, I hadn't thought of that.
Huh?
Why should we worry? My brooch is insured for way over the value here. We had...
Hortense, you keep flapping that loud tongue of yours. The first thing you know, they'll be accusing us.
Why, they wouldn't dare.
Oh, yes, we would, Mrs. Tiller.
But we're just not the time.
A $15,000 profit on a pig and whatever else you could make on your jewelry might make anybody the type.
Now,
see here, Dollar. I've had just about enough of your slanderous implications. I have a few thoughts you might profit by.
Go ahead, Worthington.
I'm always interested in profit, Tiller.
My father had the same thing happen to him back in 1902.
That's right.
Remember, dear?
Yes.
In Nebraska. He bought a prize pig at a fancy price. And then the scoundrel that sold it to him turned around and stole it back.
Hmm.
Here, see? What do you think of that?
Would this be a suggestion that we throw the young lady who sold your pig to you in the poking on the strength of something that happened 37 years ago?
Well,
that's for you to decide, Dollar.
Right.
Just don't say I didn't warn you.
Uh-huh, I see. If you don't have an orchid to pin on a young lady, fry suspicion. With most of the crowd packed in the grandstand watching the free attraction, I had a good chance to scout the fairground for Alva Anderson, from whom I wanted to learn a little bit more about the habits of not only pigs, but their ex-owners. A trail led me past the home-baked cake, hybrid corn, the watermelon pickle, tractor and harrow exhibit, and all the way back to where I'd first met her, Rollo's tent in the swine wing of the livestock building. But when I got there, Rollo's cupboard was bare. Alva was leaving for the rear door in the company of a small, tough-looking gent carrying a sack over his shoulder. Name of Little Rocky from Arkansas. I could hardly believe it, but they piled into a car and hauled off up the road. At the risk of adding one last insult to the most recent injury I'd inflicted upon Sheriff Blewett, I stole his car and went dusting up the highway in hot pursuit. There's nothing easier to follow than a red taillight on a clear night. And a bright Mazda Ruby tacked onto the rear of Little Rocky's car led me around the village of Carver and 11 miles out to the pastures to a shack hidden in a grove of elm trees 100 yards off the road. I parked the car and legged it in. 25 feet away from the house, I could call the roll through an open window. They were all there. Little Rocky, the strong-armed man who would knock me off the running board, Alva Anderson, and last but not least, it was Rollo, all 980 pounds of them, and most important to me, still alive.
Here you are, Milo, you stupid clown. Oh, stop. This is all the sweet potatoes that was left. First it goes through them, and then we'll be ready for you, Alva.
Oh, but I told you I don't have it.
We'll see about that later. Hey, Milo, don't get the porker excited. I didn't care what the sack on the fish. Then when we look at him, we throw him out the window and away from him. Now hurry up.
All right. Well, it ain't this one. Ain't this one either.
Nope. Ain't this one. Shut up. Just look.
Well, I just...
And from now on from you, no thinking. Anybody dumb enough to stash a $30,000 hunk of jewelry and pig food ought to go see a head doctor.
Oh. Through the open window, I was being bombarded by sweet potatoes and facts. While making a getaway after ripping the brooch from Mrs. Tiller's throat, Little Rocky's accomplice had suffered a sudden attack of panic. I'd hidden the brooch in one of Rollo's lunchtime yams. Whether that yam was inside the piggy or out, they and I were apparently just on the verge of learning.
Ain't here. That means your little friend here had a $30,000 snack today, which right now is giving me a great big bellyache. You know all about pigs. What do we do about it?
Well, Rocky would yell. He wouldn't rub them out.
Look who's talking. Here, take my 38 if you're so tough.
Yeah, I thought so. Now, shut up.
Well, I ain't killing no piggy with him just standing there looking at me. If he'd only make a break for it, I'd mow him down.
Now, look, baby, we'll kill him if we got him. We want that chunk of ice and we want it fast. Marlo, feed him into the corner with a sweet potato.
We're throwing them all out the window.
Oh, please, Mr. Rocky,
you
don't.
You set up, too, and set down. Close your eyes if you want to.
Oh, please, Mr. Rocky.
In the manner of Sheriff Blewett, I had an idea. Given to me, of course, by Rocky. Alva was sitting in the corner. Rollo was scratching his side by rubbing it against the opposite. And Rocky and Milo were standing shoulder to shoulder in the middle of the room, ready to advance on. I groped around the dark until I found one of the yams. And taking a sweet potato delicately in my hand, I tossed it through the window so that it would roll to a point just behind Rocky and its pal Milo. Rollo took my bait and, getting to it, knocked his two would-be executioners in a heap on the floor. I took over from there, jumping to the window and applying a kitchen chair dutifully to the barbarians, reducing enemies to a state of unconscious surrender. They gave out. Alva gave up. And Rollo gave me a dirty look. Well, Mr. Tiller, here he is, safe and sound, good as new, fat and sexy.
Well, well, good, good, congratulations.
And not only that, but in him someplace, he not only has a good fighting heart, but also that diamond brooch of yours.
wife. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, very interesting. Very interesting. Well, I'd better go charter a plane. Rollo is due in Kansas City at noon tomorrow.
Oh, but it might upset him, Mr. Tiller. Rosie Barron of Iowa's never flown before. He might lose weight.
Yeah, what's the big hurry to get him to Kansas City? Booked for a personal appearance?
Oh, no. No, hardly that. He's due to be slaughtered at a special ceremony. Yes, all the plans are made. Oh, I wouldn't want to disappoint my boys. They've been looking forward. Uh-oh.
How do you like that? Like almost murder. Poor Rollo.
Oh, Johnny.
Come on, let's get out of here, Alva. Gosh, who'd have ever thought I, Johnny Dollar, would ever gotten so attached.
Expense account, item 4, $350. Dinner for Alva and me. A vegetable dinner, by the way. And speaking of that, reminds me, if you find a $30,000 brooch in a pork chop, it'll only mean that the Blue Ribbon Prime Packing Company didn't have much luck when they went looking for it. Expense account, item 5, $20. One new gold-plated badge, which I sent to Sheriff Harry Blewett, appeasement, for having stranded him atop that Ferris wheel, for stealing his car, and for suggesting that he use a hungry pig for a bloodhound. Oh, the porter followed the MASH scent, all right. Next morning, they found Sheriff Blewett searching an old MASH factory, 8 miles the wrong side of town. Item 6, $76.80. Bus and train fare, Carver, Iowa, back to Hartford, Connecticut. Well, I'm still wondering every morning at breakfast time, what else can you eat with eggs? Except ham or bacon or sausage. And maybe you don't think that's a problem, having known a certain champion named Rollo, Rosie Barron of Iowa. Yeah, expense account total, $1,463. Yours, truly, Johnny Dollar. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Charles Russell, with script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear, Sammy Hill, and John Daner, with Junius Matthews, Ann Morrison, Jack Crucian, and Paul Dubal. Cinto Kolvig with Rollo. The special music is written and conducted by Lee Stevens. Be sure to be with us at the same time next week when another most unusual expense account is handed in by yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Your Hit Parade on Parade will be back tonight in the familiar CBS Jack Benny time with the great tunes of August 12 years ago, Sweet Leilani and Where or When. Many another still green in your memory will be among the hits you will hear. Speaking of hits, put down August 29th this year in your little book. That's when Arthur Godfrey and his talent scout, the stars of Lux Radio Theater, My Friend Irma, and Bob Hawke return to join Inner Sanctum. So make your Monday nights a regular date with CBS. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Stay tuned now for your Hit Parade on Parade. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.